Now Krishna has been explaining how to see jnana in karma. He's explained how one should take transcendental knowledge and apply it to work. That is taking jnana and applying it to karma. And then one comes to an elevated platform. If one is just working without knowledge, practically speaking, he is an animal. And then, at least with some knowledge, one should work understanding that he is dependent. He is not independent in his sense enjoyment. And by approaching the authorities or the demigods for happiness, then one is acknowledging that he is not independent in his happiness. That is knowledge in and of itself. It is not very high knowledge, but it is better than the knowledge of an animal. An animal thinks everything is dependent upon my power. He has no understanding of reality. So acknowledging that we are not independent and our happiness is something. And then, when we get a glimmer of understanding, although we may be attached to our material happiness, if our knowledge increases and one understands that actually it is not possible for me, stuck within a material body, to be happy in this world. It is not actually possible. Even though I may have material desires, satisfying those material desires cannot make me happy because I am a soul. As that knowledge increases, one's detachment from matter increases, and one becomes situated aloof on the knowledge platform that is not his body, that he's actually a soul, and then he is completely detached, although he may be working, he is completely detached from the fruit of his work. That, because he's working and he's situated in knowledge, such a person is actually on the jnana platform, although he's engaged in karma. And one needs knowledge himself to recognize that someone else is on that platform. So in text 20 and 21 and 22, there is an explanation of the symptoms of one who is on that platform. Abandoning all attachment to the results of his activities. Ever satisfied and independent. Why is he satisfied? Because he is experiencing no misery, because he has no attachment to the material world, the cause of misery. And independent, he performs no fruitive action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. That means that he is on a platform in his work, that he has given up his attachment to the fruit of his work, but he has not given up work. And he gets no reaction. Because he performs no fruit of work, he gets no reaction. So he is better situated for getting no reaction than someone who is doing no work. Because it is impossible to do no work in this world. Why? It's the right answer, but I asked the wrong question. Let me change the question. Why do we have trouble controlling our mind? Yes, Hanu?
Because the mind is flickering.
Very good. Now we have it together. Okay. Now, why is it more difficult for a person who is practicing jnana yoga to achieve freedom from reaction. Because what is his method of attaining freedom from reaction? These inactive yogas, what's his method? Mava.
Inactive yoga.
Yeah, like jnana yoga, sankhya yoga.
That's
eager.
In an empirical method.
Yeah. But what is the method of getting free from reaction for those kind of people?
Because they don't have, they don't apply senses. And
yes. So, but very clearly, what is their method of not getting any reactions? No, that's speculation. Okay, now we will. Yes, the real.
Because they seem to be liberated by not acting.
Yes, there's the answer. They think that by doing nothing, if you do nothing, therefore there won't be any reactions because you're not doing anything. But what is the difficulty? It is impossible to do nothing. So even though they don't wish to engage in any fruitive work, they're forced to act. Because the very nature of the soul is active. The soul cannot cease to be active for even an eighth of a moment. And the only time we see somebody inactive is when the soul has left the body. Because it is the soul that is giving life to the body. And the soul is always active. So here, by performing nishkam karma, or detached work, one is abandoning all attachment to the results of his activities. He's ever satisfied. That's the only way that one can be detached from the results of his activities, if one is satisfied in himself. One is experiencing some happiness from realizing that he is spirit, that he is not the body. And he is independent. He is independent of the modes of nature. And he performs no fruitive action, and therefore he doesn't get any reactions. He's acting, because the body, soul must act. But he gets no reactions, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. So again, he's not giving up his karma. He's not giving up work. But he gives up attachment to the fruit. And this is Krishna's recommendation in Bhagavad Gita, the practical recommendation of Krishna, that one should work for Krishna, completely detached from the fruit. This is Krishna's recommendation. Text 21. Such a man of understanding, again, he has knowledge, so therefore he has understanding, acts with mind and intelligence, perfectly controlled. He's focused on Krishna. He gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by sinful reactions. So these are very important instructions for devotees who want to remain free from getting entangled in the material world. Prabhupada explains in the purport. A Krishna conscious person does not expect good or bad results in his activities. His mind and intelligence are fully controlled. He knows that because he is a part and parcel of the Supreme, the part played by him as a part and parcel of the whole is not his own activity, but is only being done through him by the Supreme. So that is the prayer of the devotee. Prabhupada, one of his first translations of the Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, was just that. O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. I have been engaged in the service of my senses and my selfish desires for so many millions of births. And now I have understood that that process is not a process of happiness, but is a process of being ground and suffering so much. So now I beg you, I cry out to you, please engage me in your service as your instrument. So a devotee who is actually situated on that platform of service to Krishna is very, very fortunate. When the hand moves, it does not move of its own accord, but by the endeavor of the whole body. A Krishna conscious person is always dovetailed with the supreme desire. In other words, he is always acting in the supreme desire, for he has no desire for personal sense gratification. He moves exactly like a part of a machine. As a machine part requires oiling and cleaning for maintenance, so a Krishna conscious man maintains himself by his work just to remain fit for action in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. He is therefore immune to all the reactions of his endeavors. Like an animal, he has no proprietorship even over his own body. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would say, this actually isn't relevant in this point. I'll bring it up later. What an amazing consciousness. What a detachment from the body. What examples that are so hard for us to accept. Like an animal who doesn't have proprietorship, he has no proprietorship even over his own body. Like a machine. We don't like to hear these examples comparing our situation to like that of an animal or of a machine just working properly, just under the complete control of the master. A cruel proprietor of an animal sometimes kills the animal in his possession, yet the animal does not protest, nor does it have any real independence. A Krishna conscious person fully engaged in self-realization has very little time to falsely possess any material objects. Another point. He's not interested, he doesn't have time, he is very busy because his desire is intense to serve Krishna. This is actually the price of making advancement in Krishna consciousness, that one has to intensify his desire to serve Krishna. And when one's desire to serve Krishna is intense, he has no time for materialistic, selfish desires. He simply looks at them as in the way, so he does not bother with them. Tatra loyam apimulyam ekalam janma koti sukataya na labhyate. That there is only one price actually to make great advancement, to be situated in a great stage of advancement in Krishna consciousness. And that price is loyam. Tatra loyam api muyam ekalam. One price. And this loyam, this greed to serve Krishna, this greed to serve Krishna cannot be got easily. It is not a cheap thing. It cannot occur. Janma koti sukritayana labhyate. Then one cannot obtain this desire after millions of years, millions of births of pious activities. One cannot get this because it is so rare, this intense desire to serve Krishna. And that comes by association. That is the only way one can get this desire. One has to associate with exalted Vaishnavas who are so fixed, their hearts have melted with the desire to serve Krishna. They are no longer hard with selfish desires. Because when we act selfishly, our hearts become coated and covered more and more and more with the crust and the grease and the grime and the dust of materialism, and therefore it becomes hard. But by association with soft-hearted Vaishnavas who are actually exalted, who by the mercy of association with Vaishnavas and their own deep, deep sincerity in Krishna consciousness have cast off the iron coverings and the dirt and the grime of the heart by Krishna's mercy. Krishna has actually taken it away, and they are situated in fixed desire to serve Krishna. Intense fixed desire. So therefore, if we try to impose this consciousness on us, this is actually siddha consciousness. This is perfect consciousness. He moves exactly like a part of a machine. This is bhava, bhakti. Everything happens automatically for a person who is on this platform, who is surrendered to the internal energy. Everything is happening automatically. As Krishna desires, he moves. We cannot imitate this platform. And he is like an animal, he has no proprietorship over his own body. He's not thinking, this is mine. He's thinking, this is the temple of Krishna. Krishna is inside. It is simply meant for the service of Krishna. It's the menial service of Krishna, insignificant service of Krishna. One time, I was sitting with Prabhupada in Australia, in Melbourne, and Prabhupada had just gotten a letter, and he read it to us I don't know the right word for the mood he was in. Something like sarcastic. He said, My dear Srila Prabhupada, please accept my most humble, useless, fallen obeisances. I have a great problem. Now, we don't think that's funny, but Prabhupada went like this. How could someone who is useless and fallen have a great problem? Because if you really think that you are useless and insignificant and completely tiny, and all you could have is a completely insignificant, useless problem. But we, in our false humility, I am the most fallen, and because I am the most fallen, I have such a great problem. So you please, it is very important that you... There's like an ant with a problem. An ant has a problem, but who cares? So if we actually feel ourselves insignificant, then there is no question of us really being disturbed by some problem. Big, big, big problems that we have. But our pride is our problem. And therefore we have big, big problems, even though we are actually insignificant. So, we should not think in anything other way that actually we can only do insignificant service as Krishna, if Krishna allows us. Even if it seems to another as if it's big, big service, we can know that there is no big, big, big service that we can do for Krishna. He has everything. We can just become, if we are very, very fortunate, and it's very hard actually to deeply accept this point, we can become one of unlimited, insignificant servants. And for most of us, this is not very appealing. To become one of unlimited, insignificant servants. But this is actually our situation, and this is actually our greatest fortune if we can accept this. But to accept it, we have to come to grips with reality, and we have to come very advanced even to understand this really basic point. Krishna has unlimited servants. He has great servants. He has nitya parikars. He has so many shakti tattva servants. He has all the residents of Vrindavan who have never visited this material world at all. Eternally, his energy serving him, and he's already fully served by them. And here we are struggling in the material world. We want to become big, so we take that concept and transfer it to spiritual life and want to become big servants, but actually we cannot. And we have to be ready to become an insignificant servant. So therefore, like an animal, he has no proprietorship even over his body. He doesn't even claim this body as his. He's ready to use everything, just simply. This is Krishna's. I'm so fortunate to be able to serve Krishna. There's very little time to falsely possess any material object. This is such an exalted platform that Prabhupada is describing. So does not, we can't artificially do this, not have time to possess material objects. It will turn to another type of pride only. But if we are actually exalted and fixed in the consciousness, I am Krishna's insignificant servant, then, and if we are actually have that greed for that consciousness deeply, then we will also have these elements. For maintaining body and soul, he does not require unfair means of accumulating money. He does not, therefore, become contaminated by such material sin. He is free from all reactions to his actions. 22. He who is satisfied, and this 22 and 23, describe the consciousness of someone working. His work is jaga. His work is an actual sacrifice to Krishna. He who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, like the python in the Bhagavatam, this is an exalted consciousness. It sounds so simple. Or Madhavendra Puri, who would not even beg. He was satisfied that whatever came, it came by Krishna's mercy. If nothing came, he was satisfied that Krishna's mercy was in that form. If some milk came, he was satisfied with that. He was fasting for days in Braja. And this mood of dependence on Krishna, is affectionate, just satisfied with whatever Krishna sent. His mood was so attractive that Krishna himself came and offered him something to eat. Krishna became so attracted to that consciousness. And Krishna said, "No one fasts in my village. Who are you, young boy?" "Oh, I'm just a coward boy." "Well, how did you know I was fasting?" "Oh, the ladies by the well over there, they told me. Here, you take this milk. You drink it. I'll come back later and get the pot." Who was that boy? When will he come back? I want to see him again. When will he come back to get his pot? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. When will he come back? And then he fell asleep and the boy came back. "My name is Gopal and I am the lifter of Govardhan Hill." But he was so attracted to Madhavendra Puri. Then Gopal said, "I have been waiting for many days for you to come here." So Krishna is waiting for his devotee like that. So he who is satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, a similar quality is mentioned in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita at the end, who is free from duality, te dvandva mohaniya muktam. If one is free from duality, one can become free from the material world. It is the duality that keeps us in the material world. This is good and this is bad. This is good, this is bad. This is the business of the mind all day long, every day. I like this, I don't like this, on and on. Just completely fabricating that something in the material world is good and something in the material world is bad, while in actuality, everything in the material world is bad. Completely enwrapped in this illusory dvandva, duality. And this is how we spend our days and nights. This is good, this is bad, I like this, I don't like this, he's good, he's bad, this one's good, this is a good place, this is a bad seat, this is a good seat, this is a bad seat, I like this over here, I don't like this. All day long, our mind is doing this. And therefore, that is the business of the conditioned soul, trapped by the dualities. So such a person who is steady, he does not envy. He is free from duality, he does not envy. That means that he accepts everything that happens to him as Krishna's mercy. This is the only way to become free from envy in this world. Understanding that when we get touched by anything, we may consider it good or bad, but it is Krishna touching us, because not a blade of grass can move without Krishna's sanction. How many times a day should I have remembered this? That Krishna is the doer, the ultimate person who is making everything happen. And when I envy someone, I am not accepting that Krishna has allowed him to do it. So such a person who is steady in both success and failure, because this is just the interactions of the modes of nature or Krishna. So such a person who is just fixed in Krishna's service despite success and failure, and all having these other qualities, is never entangled, although performing actions, and his very activity is a sacrifice to Krishna, a pure sacrifice to Krishna. More qualities. Well, this is explained in the next verse. Gatta sangasya muktasya gyanavastita chaitasta jagyacharata karma samagram pravaliyate. He is working, his very work and activities are for the sake of Jagat or Krishna or Vishnu. The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge, and this is the way to become situated in knowledge, is the way to become unattached to the modes of nature, to become attached to Krishna. He merges, his work merges entirely into transcendence. How is it that his work merges into transcendence? This is explained in the next verse in this section. The qualities and how this work becomes transcendental or on the Brahman platform. This is explained in the next verse. So this is how everything is on the Brahman platform for such a person. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom. His absorption is there because of his full contribution to spiritual activities. Everything connected to what he does is spiritual, in which the consummation is absolute. That which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. So everything is done, everything is seen as Brahman for a person is walking in this way or on the Brahman platform. And Krishna, of course, because Krishna is Parabrahman, that everything done for Krishna is on the platform. That means the person who is doing the activity, he is fully transcendental. The thing that he is doing, because he's doing it in that consciousness, just detached from matter and attached to Krishna, the act that he's doing is transcendental on the Brahman platform. And the result of that act is transcendental. And the offering of that act to Krishna, the offering of the fruit, is transcendental. And the acceptance is transcendental. Everything is simply on the Brahman platform because his consciousness is Brahman. Prabhupada explains in the purport how activities in Krishna consciousness can lead one ultimately to the spiritual goals described here. There are various activities in Krishna consciousness, and all of them will be described in the following verses. But for the present, just the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. How work can be a jaga, how work that is a jaga on the transit for Krishna is all spiritual. That's what's described. A conditioned soul entangled in material contamination is sure to act in the material atmosphere. And yet, he has to get out of such an environment. The process by which the conditioned soul can get out of the material atmosphere is Krishna consciousness. That means that he has to work in Krishna consciousness. For example, a patient who is suffering from a disorder of the bowels due to an overindulgence in milk products is cured by another milk product, namely curd or yogurt. The materially absorbed conditioned soul can be cured by Krishna consciousness as set forth here in the Gita. This process is generally known as jaga, or activity sacrifice, is simply meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu or Krishna. So when one's consciousness is actually fixed in, I am a servant of Krishna, this body is meant to serve Krishna. Whatever comes my way, I will use to serve Krishna. And I will do all this under proper directions, not whimsically, under the guidance of Guru. And therefore Krishna will accept everything. So me, my consciousness, the work, the fruit, the acceptance, Krishna himself, everything has an incredibly powerful spiritual potency because it's all on the Brahman platform. So the more the activities of the material world are performed in Krishna consciousness or for Vishnu only, such simple wording, but such deep and hard to attain on platform of meaning and realization. So the more the activities of the material world are performed in Krishna consciousness or for Vishnu only, the more the atmosphere becomes spiritualized by complete absorption. So the whole atmosphere of a place, of a person, of things that are used in Krishna's service is completely spiritual. It doesn't feel at all material. Sometimes, someone once told me a story of how at the manor in England, there was a, when they first opened the manor, there was a local, they had claimed some exemption in taxes. So someone came to inspect, a local tax collector or something like that, or inspector came. So he wanted to see how it was a religious place. You know, and of course the British are very official and bureaucratic like that. So he wanted to see, so they brought him to the temple room. They had him take off his shoes, and they brought him right in front of the deities. And they left him there, and they walked out. And in a few minutes he came out and said, "I never thought it was going to be like this." And that's such a, it happens every time we go in front of the deities practically. We go there, we just concentrate on them and just look at how beautiful Krishna Balaram is, or Radhashyama Sundar Gaunatayi. We become absorbed because everything is simply done purely for Krishna's pleasure. And the symptoms of that are the cleanliness and the promptness, the being on time. Just even though it's hard to be clean, it's hard to be on time. And Prabhupada, once he was standing in front of the altar, Krishna Gaunatayi altar, right before greeting the deities, he looked at his watch. It was 20 seconds late. The deity door opens and Prabhupada said, "It is very difficult to be a Brahmin." 20 seconds late. Because the mood is for Krishna's pleasure. For Krishna's pleasure, and therefore always thinking about Krishna, for him, pleasing him, cooking, cleaning, on time, neat, just doing it right, just for his pleasure. Then everything becomes effulgent, and the atmosphere becomes so different that a mundane tax collector walks in who's never had any Krishna conscious experience
And he says, I never thought it was going to be like this.
Because matter and spirit, night and day, the difference. So everything, when done properly, according to the rules and regulations, in the right consciousness, becomes on the Brahman platform. Now, the next 8 verses, which we'll go through quite quickly, are another section. And here, work has been described, or karma has been described on the jnana platform. This jaga or work has been described as a jaga on the karma, on the jnana platform. And now, how other types of jagas, or other types of works or activities, based on higher authority, are explained in the next 8 verses. These are all different types of sacrifices. Now, the first one is another one of karma to obtain jnana. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them. We've heard of that already in the 3rd chapter of the Karma Kanda section. And some offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. So that is coming to the Brahman platform more, the Jnana platform. Some, the unadulterated brahmacharis, and there are 2 types of brahmacharis that are described, sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control. So one type of brahmachari, the Naishtiki brahmachari, sacrifices his senses into the sense, to the sense objects. That's the brahmachari. He does not engage the senses in the sense objects. And the others, the regulated householders, sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. So the householders, they have enjoyment, but their jaga is there cannot be any attachment to that enjoyment. Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the life breath as ablations into the fire of the control mind. So this is the process of Astanga Yoga, as Prabhupada explains in the purport. The yoga system, the eightfold yoga system that will be described further and in more detail in chapter 6. So in this Astanga Yoga, the life airs, there's 10 different life airs, and they are manipulated with the purpose of controlling the mind. 28. Having accepted strict vows, so all these are different types of jagas or sacrifice to make gains, spiritual advancement. Having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, and others, so sacrifice of matter, and that leads to enlightenment, which means knowledge, and others by performing severe austerities, by practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge. So one does these things to get knowledge or enlightenment. Prabhupada explains, all these practices are called yoga jaga, sacrifice for a certain type of perfection in the material world. Still others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint or pranayama, to remain in trance, practice by offering the movements of the outgoing breath into the incoming and the incoming breath into the outgoing, and thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Some type of pranayama, raja yoga. Others curtailing the eating process. So one, if one practices pranayama, one controls the mind, and then after one controls the mind, one withdraws it from the senses. That is called pratyahara. After pranayama comes pratyahara, and then dharan, dhyan, then samadhi. And then another type of mental control, and which will lead to the controlling of the senses, is others curtailing the eating process, offer the outgoing breath into itself as sacrifice. So the purpose of controlling the eating process and doing that type of an austerity is for the breath control, then the mind control, then the sense control. Now, here's summing up all these different sacrifices and their purpose, because all these are Vedic. And one might want to know, how all these fit in with what's being explained as the goal of Krishna consciousness. So now Krishna is going to put them into perspective. All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice become cleansed of sinful reaction. And having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifice, they advance towards the supreme eternal atmosphere. Actually, according to the sacrifice that they make, they get a different result. But the ultimate result is going towards Krishna, or actually achieving Krishna. So all these are different stages and different sacrifices that different people will perform according to what? According to their own natures. According to one's own nature, one will be attracted to one type of a sacrifice or another. But the ultimate is not to do these type of sacrifices, but the ultimate is to attain the Supreme, and these are just different steps bringing us closer to Krishna. 31. O best of the Kuru dynasty, without sacrifice one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? So if one doesn't sacrifice, one is called, as we heard in the third chapter, Stena. Who remembers what Stena means? One hand is going up in the back. A thief, yes. And one cannot be happy. This has already been explained. And not only one can't be happy in this life, but in future lives, one will not get. Right now, everyone is enjoying the previous good karma, bank balance, so to speak. And after one uses that up, in future lives, one will go down. So if one doesn't sacrifice and put money in his karma bank account, so to speak, or put good karma or punya in his bank account or spiritual credits like that, one will not have a good life now and one will not have a good life in the future. So that is what is explained over here. So this is already explained in chapter 3. That there will be no good result if one doesn't perform sacrifice. So it's only a question of what sacrifice one wants to perform. Because we should accept this fact that without sacrifice there cannot be happiness in this life or in the next. Not kama, artha, moksha, or dharma. Nothing will come without sacrifice. We should accept this. We cannot get anything good by an easy life of leisure. There has to be sacrifice. There has to be sacrifice if we want to achieve anything. And then 32, and we'll read this one, 32 and 33, and then we'll end. All these different types of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas, and all of them are born of different type of work. Knowing them as such, you will be liberated. So, you paid attention there in the last section of verses. We have full opportunity to become liberated, Prabhupada explains in the purport. Different types of sacrifices discussed above are mentioned in the Vedas to suit the different type of worker. Because men are so deeply absorbed in the bodily concept, these sacrifices are so arranged that one can either work with the body, with the mind, or with the intelligence. But all of them are recommended for ultimately bringing about liberation from the body. This is confirmed by the Lord herewith from His own mouth. So which of these sacrifices, there are so many named, is there an order? Is one better than the other? That is explained in the next verse. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. In other words, if one knows what one is doing and knows his position, he will get a much better result than if one is blindly doing it without knowledge. So knowledge is always helpful. We are doing, and we are sacrificing this and sacrificing that. But unless we have knowledge, the result of that sacrifice we do will be first to get us knowledge. And then the ultimate result will come when we do the sacrifice with full knowledge. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Prita, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. So this is the purpose of all the sakam activities, all the karmakanda activities. It is to bring one to the platform of knowledge so one can perform this nishkam karma and give everything to Krishna. Prabhupada explains in the purport, we'll read the entire purport. The purpose of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge and then to get released from material miseries and ultimately to engage in loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord, Krishna consciousness. Nonetheless, there is a mystery about all these different activities of sacrifice, and one should know this misery. Again, know, what does that mean? That means that we should have knowledge about these different types of sacrifice and what the perspective is. Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches the stage of transcendental knowledge that he is not his body, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that he is Krishna's part and parcel, that he is meant to serve Krishna, that this material world is temporary and time is just like a big spoon stirring the whole material soup. So this is transcendental knowledge. So when one has this knowledge, when one's faith reaches the stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer of sacrifices should be considered more advanced than the one who simply sacrifices material possessions without such knowledge. For without attainment of knowledge, sacrifices remain on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. Real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. Without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities. When, however, they are elevated to the level of transcendental knowledge, all such activities enter onto the spiritual platform. So that is like the difference between the sacrifices of karmakanda and the sacrifices of sakkam karma yoga. Depending on different activities are sometimes called karmakanda, fruit of activities, and sometimes jnanakanda, knowledge in the pursuit of truth. It is better when the end is knowledge. Okay, so we'll end here. Are there any questions? So many questions. Mother group presented.
You say you have to have knowledge when you do sacrifice, but if you don't have knowledge, you can't even have a Krishna. Thoughts up to this fire is so big, the fish shall be the right fire not.
So what will the effect be? So what is the effect? No, what is the effect of chanting Hare Krishna without knowledge? We'll take a poll here. When all of you started chanting Hare Krishna, did you have any knowledge? And then you chant for a while, and what happens? Association, etc. You become more advanced in knowledge, and of course, cleansing the heart, and of course, ultimately, love. Because it says here that the sacrifice, of course, it doesn't apply to the chanting Hare Krishna when one is doing a jaga. It will remain on the material platform. It doesn't apply to chanting Hare Krishna, but that's the idea. But the more transcendental knowledge we have about Krishna, not just that we're not this body, but the more we know about Krishna's name, form, qualities, and the more we'll be inclined to turn our affection towards Him. Sometimes Prabhupada would say that we know everything about God, His name, His address, His telephone number. And other religions, they have a very vague concept of God. But Krishna consciousness, the concept of God is focused. That means that the knowledge of Krishna is crystal clear of who God is. Why is He God? What He does, what He looks like, what he likes to eat, what he likes to wear on his head. What does he like to wear on his head? Ah, so many peacock feathers. And a turban. And sometimes he'll color his face with the different minerals of Vrindavan and oxides. So this is very detailed transcendental knowledge about Krishna, about God.
When you were talking about text 21, when you were talking about the consciousness of ant being animal and machine,
yeah,
those examples, you're saying that they were very exalted and aren't to be imitated. So what is to be aspired for in most of our stages of development?
Aspiration is one thing, imitation is another. We should lament that we don't have this consciousness, we should aspire for this consciousness, but we should not imitate someone who has that consciousness, because we won't be able to do it for a long time and we will fall down. We should know how we should act from Guru. He will instruct us how to act so we will make gradual progress, as opposed to jumping way up here and then falling down and then going to this place. And that we should steadily do service. We can lament, we can aspire, but we should not imitate.
So we have conditioning, which, you know, sometimes has a good connotation.
What?
The word initiative.
Initiative.
Yeah. Like, you know, someone has a genius but also has some creativity or some... So is there room for that in the concept of, you know, servitude, like an animal, possessed by the master?
It is very difficult for us to understand the consciousness of someone in Bhava Bhakti. In fact, it is impossible for us to understand that consciousness. But we should know that if we become exalted devotees, we will be satisfied. Sometimes we may think that, you know, we read about the residents of Vrindavan, and we hear that the gopis, what do? All they make garlands. You know, it sounds like a factory or something like that. You mean, again, you know, for eternity too, you don't have to make garlands every day? Oh, no. So we should understand it's not exactly like that. You know, there's a difference in consciousness and love. So it is not...
Someone's at a lower level without speculating, is there any room for creativity, or is it kind of dangerous?
Creativity, of course, you can't stop it. Creativity is born of what mode of material nature?
Right.
Yeah, it's passion. So if you have passion, you should be creative in Krishna service, but you should do it under the guidance of Guru, so you don't create a monster. Or havoc. Any other questions or comments? Krishna Bhattacharya.
How you would analyze the position of Muslim who call the name Ram, Aram, without performing any sacrifice, you know, just because he called a name, it was not even indicating Ram, and it meant perfection.
What
or some kind of some liberation.
Liberation, but not prem.
It doesn't say very much.
No, liberation, but not prem. He'll explain, Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains this in Harinam Chintamani. Prem can only be gotten by Shudanam, not Abbas, Namabhas.
But his feeling is very elevated because he's through the name.
He became liberated. Right.
Not like the Mahabhadi was.
Because there is no aparad. Yeah. So what's the question?
Well, it's no, I mean, he doesn't perform any sacrifice.
But the name is
especially
merciful.
Knowledge.
And then usually what happens, Prabhupada also, that's also described in the Nectar Devotion. There's so many activities that are exalted, they immediately bring liberation. And if one chants the holy name once, one commits more, one become, one removes more sins than is possible for him to commit. But then if one isn't habituated to pure life, fixed in transcendental knowledge, one may sin again. And we see that. I once asked Prabhupada, I was with Prabhupada, I'm feeling so happy, and then my mind took over, and I was feeling my usual miserable self. So I said to Prabhupada, how is it that sometimes we feel liberated and sometimes we feel completely controlled? And he explained very simply, the intoxication of Maya is very strong. So Maya is very intoxicating. So we can easily fall under her grips again. We've seen this with so many immature spiritual personalities who actually had advanced to some degree, not to a mature stage, but advanced to some degree, but fell down. Because the intoxication of Maya is very, very, very strong. So, although we can say that knowledge isn't so important because a Muslim can chant, say, haram, haram, but we should know that Prabhupada made his main business book translation, book distribution, book production. Why? What is so good about the books? I heard Prabhupada say, why are we so interested in book distribution? Because it is distribution of knowledge. It is distribution of knowledge. They are meant to be read, not just distributed, he said. Not that we should just read them and not distribute them, but not that we should just distribute them and not read them. It is not export business. So we shouldn't underestimate the importance of it. Otherwise, why did Prabhupada put so much energy? This is association with such exalted personalities. So many devotees became devotees just by associating with Prabhupada, Arjuna, Krishna, just by reading Bhagavad Gita. So many people became devotees just like that. There's a story that Bhajanayam Prabhu told me. He was somewhere in some little island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean selling paintings to make some money. And he had his hair and everything like that. And he had some Rajasthani paintings. And there was one of Krishna on display like that. And some, you know those paintings. So in the middle of this island, in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, he saw these people just looking. Yeah, who is that? Is that him? Yeah. Seems like him, just like in the book. It's him, what's he doing? He's playing his flute. Yeah, it must be him. A man and a woman talking like this. So he walked over and he said, hello, you know, can I help you with anything? Well, you seem very interested in this picture. Why don't you tell me why? He was trying to, and he said, you won't understand. So he said, no, try me, tell me. You know, tell me, I will understand, I will. Tell me. No, you won't understand. Tell me. So finally they told him that somewhere they were traveling and someone distributed a Krishna book to them. And they never met any devotees after that. But they were living on this little island somewhere, and every morning they were getting up very early, following the instructions of Krishna book and reading the Krishna book together and chanting. And they wanted that picture for that reason. And I've never met any devotees other than the one who gave them a book. So this is the potency of transcendental knowledge and association. It has its own potency. Okay, let's stop. Thank you.